Welcome to Brothers of the Holy War. I am Chase Egbert, joined as always with Andrew Brown. How are you doing tonight, Andrew?
I am doing fantastic. How are you, Chase?
Oh, hanging in there. We'll get into that in a minute, huh? It is crazy. Time's flying by, but you know, some of the things I think we're going to talk about tonight, how legit are the Utes?
Also, what's the source of BYU's woes?
Other games throughout the nation and how everyone else did.
And we'll dig a little further into the keys to this week's games. How do both teams get a W?
And as always, and you might want to stay tuned for this one, I've written up something. Typically I go off the cuff, but this one's written down. So, final rant. All right, let's do this thing.
Let's go.
Segment one, game highlights. Andrew, your Utah Utes are looking pretty dang good. How'd they do this past weekend?
Oh, man, they were as dominant as they've been in a really long time. I'm going to not try to get too excited about it because it's Oregon State, who I think is improved, but still Oregon State. But 52-7, that's never a bad thing, right?
No, you get above 50 points, that's awesome. Take that any day.
Yeah. And I guess if we're highlighting one play I want to talk about to get started, I have three written down. I'm having a hard time deciding which one I want to do. We'll give honorable mention to Zach Moss's 91-yard touchdown run, just because that's just Zach Moss. He does it. But my favorite play of the game was 4th and 7. And I think Utah's up 14-0 at this point, and they go for it on 4th down. Tyler Hundley drops an absolute dime for a 30-yard touchdown to Samson Nakua, and puts us up 21-0 in the first quarter. Kind of just cements the beatdown's on at that point. And that's my favorite play, to see them go for the kill like that. Utah doesn't often do that.
Yeah, it is awesome. And you know, I don't know if you're bringing him up or not, but the person that keeps surprising me, I mean, we all know about Zach Moss and how awesome he is, but the person that keeps surprising me over and over is Tyler Hundley. He ended the game 14 of 17, 247 yards, 2 touchdowns. I mean, he's looking pretty good, and he's helping his stock.
Dude's legit. I think at the very least at this point, he's earned himself a tryout for an NFL team at the end of the year, and I think if he is even close to what he's been this first half of the season, he's worth a flyer late 5th, 6th, 7th round. He's just been awesome. I know we've talked about it over and over again, but his decision making, his throws downfield, when to run, when to move around the pocket, and not turning the ball over, still no interceptions. He's just been everything you could ask for out of quarterback Moore. So yeah, he's been awesome.
Yeah, and like you said, it was against a Oregon State team that has been down over the years. Like you said, they have been a little improved, and people are trying to hype them up a little bit. But accurate throws, great decisions, and, you know, I've always, for some reason, I had in the back of my mind, Tyler Huntley's a runner. You know, I've always kind of had that in the back of my mind. He only ran for 7 yards. He's been thrown.
Yeah, dude's an athlete, so if you ask him to run, you can watch the USC game. He can run if he needs to. But I think for the first time in his career, he's playing quarterback. He's making the right decisions, and he's running when he needs to instead of being an athlete back there and running and then throwing when he's supposed to. So I'd like the change. Yeah.
You really want people to watch the USC game?
No, I don't want to. That's just such a sore subject because of what could be at this point, like how they've looked since then. But I think it was a really good wake-up call. The amount of focused players we've seen since that game, I don't know. It might have been a blessing in disguise, but we'll see.
Yeah, little wake-up call.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. They've just been – these last 2 weeks have been another level of focus. I don't remember 2 beatdowns like that Utah's had since they've been in the Pac-12, since like they did the last 2 weeks. So.
Yeah. No, it definitely has been impressive, and it'll be interesting to see how they move forward against a pretty, you know, surprisingly good Arizona State team.
Yeah. We'll talk about keys to victory on that one. This is one we want bad. And if you listen to any Utah players talking about the game this week, they got a pretty bad taste in their mouth from last year's defeat. So I'm excited to see what happens.
Awesome. On the BYU side of the ball, some of the game highlights. Obviously, everyone at this point knows BYU had a tough loss down in Florida, still winless in the state of Florida. It's just unreal. It's kind of that same USC voodoo that you guys have with USC down there. But some of the high points, I have to say, Jaren Hall actually looked okay. You know, I know it's maybe against inferior defense compared to the likes of USC or the SEC speed you would expect to see with Tennessee. But he still looked good. He looked athletic. He hung in there. He got sacked 6 times, which is more of the offensive line. Granted, the offensive line came in more beat up than the coaches let on to. They didn't start. I think Hodge didn't even start, if I remember right. And then they had 2 linemen go down after the game started. So they were scraping the bottom of the barrel on the offensive line. And Jaren got, you know, pressured many times. But he just kept hanging in there. Had a great run. I think that would have to be my play of the game is when he scrambled. He took off to the left, ran down, and outran everybody and got a 32-yard touchdown run. He also had a bomb. It was a sweet throw. Did you see that one where Romney had that one-handed catch?
Highlights only, but yeah, I saw it.
Yeah, no, that was awesome grab. Had one similar in the season, just like that on the opposite side of the field. But, I mean, so for BYU, that's some of the highlights, some of the downfalls in this 23-27 loss. Obviously, the sacks hurt. They could not stop the run the second half. It was just the same old story as the last 3 games. Everybody, you know, does all right, actually shows up, does pretty good the first half. And I don't know, it's just coaches didn't make adjustments. They almost went back. It seemed like they went back to that 3-front. They didn't walk up the safeties. No, there was only 7 guys in the box most of the time. I don't know why there wasn't adjustments made on the fly. I don't get it.
Yeah, that's a tough one to explain when you know they're going to run the football. You're watching them run the football, and you still can't stop them running the football. Not a more helpless or frustrating feeling than that, I think.
Seriously. Well, and, you know, there was reports that the quarterback may have been a little dinged up, and then after the game they came out, I'm like, yeah, he's having a hard time grip the ball. I'm like, man, no joke. Put one person on every receiver out there and everybody else is in the box. It's like, I don't care if there's 9 guys in the box. Let's just load that box and make them throw it. Even if they get one over the top on us, so be it. We got to stop this run. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, I'll be interested to see after – you know, hearing some coaches' comments and things, how the game plan changes going into next week. Because if you're Boise State's running back right now and Boise State's offensive line, you're going to be licking your chops thinking we're going to have a field day. So I'd be interested to see what BYU does to change that up a little bit.
Oh, yeah, for sure. If I was Boise State, I'd be saying, all right, boys, our goal is 300 yards rushing, period. Let's do this thing.
Yeah, so. We'll see.
But I don't know. These Boise State games have been close in the past. They're down to their second and third string quarterbacks. We're down to third and fourth. They're kind of banged up a little bit. I don't think as much as BYU. Have you seen the list of everyone that's banged up?
No, it's on BYU? Yeah, it's a long one.
Yeah. So just like real quick, starting quarterback, backup quarterback, starting running back, starting linebacker, starting safety, starting, I think it was right guard, and then during the game, left tackle and right tackle go down. Just insane.
Yeah, that's tough. That's tough for any team to overcome injuries like that, but it's even tougher when you're struggling for depth at this point of the season.
Yeah. So at this point, I mean, they're 2-4, you know, it's just a hard one to swallow. It's a real hard one. There's a lot of people upset right now, and there's a camp that's whole over there saying fire the coaches. There's some saying, well, where's the administration? There's some saying these players need to take the responsibility. And it'll just be interesting to see, and I kind of want to talk about it later as far as what is the source of BYU's woes at the moment.
Yeah, that's, I guess, depending on who you're talking to or whose perspective you're looking from. I've heard a lot of different, you know, you can point a lot of different fingers, which is a hard thing to fix when you're sitting at 2-4 and you're not sure exactly what's causing it. But I guess you got to start somewhere, right?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, you got to start somewhere, and, you know, we'll get into it. But I think the foundation is a good place to look. You know, I think a lot of people are pointing to the things they can see, but if the foundation isn't sure, then it's going to be a long road ahead of BYU.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
So, on that, ready to jump into goggles on, goggles off?
All right.
Segment 2, goggles on, goggles off. Okay, Andrew, we talked a little bit about Oregon State. Maybe they're on the upswing, maybe not. Hard to tell. So how good is Utah after putting up 50 points against them?
You know, looking at Oregon State, they beat UCLA pretty handily. They barely lost to Stanford. They've had a couple other close losses and some decent wins. I don't think Oregon State is exceptionally good. I think they're taking steps in the right direction. I think they're a decent football team. But I think what is most impressive about this game for Utah is they did what good or great teams should do against inferior opponents. They smacked them around from the get-go, and they never took their foot off the gas, which is something that Utah's lacked the last couple years. I think the Utah football team for the last couple of years would have beat Oregon State, but they would have let them hang around and would have worn them out in the fourth quarter and pulled away. So I was excited to see this never be in doubt.
Yeah, exactly. They started from the get-go, and there was never a change of tempo through the end.
Yeah, 21 points in the first quarter. I'm not sure last time Utah's done that. Almost a shutout outside of some garbage time touchdowns. So I'm not sure you can nitpick one thing outside of maybe some penalties. So it was just a dominant performance. And I think, I'm not, you know, you can't say Utah's really good because they beat Oregon State, but it makes me feel like they're better than they have been because of the dominance. So.
And, you know, after last week's episode, that's pretty much what my rant was about for BYU. You know, you should go into a team that you feel is inferior to you and just pop them in the jaw, and then don't let them up until the end of the game. Then you pick them up and say good game, and you move on. And that's exactly what Utah did.
Yeah, yeah, it's good feeling. Hasn't always happened with Utah, so I'm excited to see what that means in the future.
So after watching that, do you feel... is your offense better, or is it your defense?
Defense is where Utah hangs their hat. I've been more impressed with the offense the last couple weeks, just with their ability to run the football and throw the football. The fact that we are able to be multidimensional, you know, run it and throw it for big gains, and not just use the throw game to set up the run, that we're attacking people with the passing game. With that being said, in this particular game, I would be more impressed with the defense. Oregon State's put up at least 28 points on everybody they've played this year. I think they have the leading receiver in the Pac-12, and they've been putting up points. And if you get rid of that garbage touchdown at the end when the twos and the threes are in. Utah's offense pitched a shutout, or defense pitched a shutout. So in that particular game, I'll say Utah's defense was more impressive.
Have you been this excited about the offense since, say, the Sugar Bowl?
Oh, man, it's been a long time. It's been a really long time. And I know the last 2 weeks haven't been against great defenses, but I think the offense has been rolling since the USC game. I know it's lost, but I think the offense has started to click, and then they showed what they can do on all cylinders the last two games.
Offensive coordinator to be, I don't know, dubbed as the one, you know, try and keep him around longer than a year or two.
Witts said in many press conferences that he plans on Ludwig being his OC as long as he coaches. So I don't know what that means. Oh, wow. as far as how long Witt decides he's going to coach, but he's probably not. He's not going to let Ludwig. He's going to try to not let Ludwig go anywhere. So I'm happy about it.
Yeah, that's been one thing with Whittingham. If there is one thing to say, is his offensive coordinator has been kind of a carousel,
a revolving door of offensive coordinators. That's true. And it's funny that it's come back to the last actual good one, and we're back here, and maybe this will stick for a while, hopefully.
There you go.
Okay, let me change subjects here for you, Chase. First question. Okay. with your blue goggles on, what is BYU's record if Taysom Williams is healthy?
Williams was healthy. Honestly, I just feel like they'd win the last two. I know it's a lot to hang on one person, but at least Toledo. Like, they would have beat Toledo for sure. The offensive line healthy, and it's not to say that the running backs didn't do a good job there. They did fine, but he just has that SEC vibe. You know, he can do something with nothing. He can get that extra 5 yards after contact. He can help carry this offense. And the other thing, if you think about it, Andrew, the one thing that would have done for BYU is it would have helped a very young quarterback step in at the end of the game, had that still been the scenario, right? He, at that point, they would have still had to respect the run so much to the point that you don't have two safeties back there just eyeing people. It takes another person into the box and opens up a receiver, and that would have helped Jaron out big time had they had him for South Florida. Same thing, they had to respect him. They have to bring an extra guy into the box. It opens up the run, or the throw, after they pound the ball at him, and it just takes so much pressure off of Jaron coming in as the second string quarterback. I think for sure Toledo, and I don't see why not against South Florida.
So I've thought a lot about this question or this idea, because I think it was Mr. Ben Criddle actually who posted it, or maybe relayed it from somebody else, that he thought BYU would be 4-2 if Taysom Williams was healthy. So that leads me to think, like, are we saying that these last two losses are on the offense, or he just makes the difference?
No, it's hard to hang it just on the offense, right? But there was opportunities multiple times where the offense didn't score. There was some crazy stat, and I think we talked about it a little bit last week, where they went 2-for-13 on third downs against Toledo. And then now after South Florida, there's another statistic floating around out there that BYU has had something like 13 drives over 11 plays that have not scored consecutively. So, you know, you just got to think that, okay, against a lesser opponent, if we can get into the red zone that many stinking times against these last two teams, someone like a Taysom Williams can get us the extra 5, 10, 15 yards into the end zone where he's averaging 5 yards a carry.
Yeah, I think I agree with that. I think his ability, like you said, to do more with less than what BYU has at running back right now might make a difference in those two games for sure.
Yeah. Well, and even think if the scenario was the exact same and they had two chances to drive down and score. You think about what happened. I know you didn't have a chance to watch all of it, but that last two drives, they got to, I think, like the 15-yard line and like the 20, 25-yard line, and they were trying to throw it. They were trying to throw like 10, 15 yards, and they had five guys out in coverage. And of course, for freshman quarterback, this can be really hard. You give it to someone like Taysom Williams, let him run it 7, 10 yards. They had plenty of timeouts. BYU's in great shape, you know? But instead, they were set up trying to hold up a pocket and let him throw.
Yeah. Yeah, I can agree with that. I can agree with that. So let me change subjects here real quick. Unfortunately, BYU is not 4-2. They're sitting at 2-4.
Right.
With your bluest of blue goggles on, can BYU get bowl eligible?
If I get my beginning of the year goggles, clean them up a little, yes. So here's the scenario. Worst case scenario, they beat Liberty, Idaho State, UMass, and then they're on a roll and they beat San Diego State. There's your six games. They go to Hawaii, enjoy a full week of vacation, and come back healthy next year. That's with the blue goggles, right? So blue goggles off. Worst case scenario. Well, absolute worst, you lose out, which that better not happen.
Yeah, that's.
But
yeah, I can't do that.
So blue goggles off. Maybe you lose to Boise State. You lose to, I hate saying it, Utah State, and then you win the last four.
Yeah. And that gets you bowl eligible, right? That gets you 6-6 right there.
Yep. Yeah, which is the same as last year. So you're hoping for one better, but at this point, that's kind of what you're rooting for.
But how loud does it get if they lose the next two here and you're sitting at 2-6?
Oh, man. So it's not that. It's losing to Boise State and losing to Utah State, which of course is terrible. You never want to do that. But I think it's because you lost ugly to Washington, and then you go to Toledo and you lose a sloppy one to Toledo. And then you go to South Florida and you, I hate to say it against Strong, but you got out coached and another sloppy loss. So that's three really sloppy losses. And then if you lose another two, it's just having that many in a row that's super ugly. It's not that the next two are bad. It's just that there's four in a row, five in a row. That's where people are going to be calling for heads to roll.
Okay, so we'll keep it short so we can get to the next segment here. But this is off the cuff, just thinking about what we've talked about so far. I know Kalani Sitake's seat is already hot. And I know at the end of the year, no matter what happens here, it could still be hot. But my question for you is there any chance this goes so far south that he gets fired in season? Like, what would happen? Like, is there any chance of that happening?
Ooh, yes. Yeah. And that would stink. I mean, that would be a slap to everywhere from Tom Holmo down to the players. I think that'd be a huge slap in the face. But if they lose to Liberty, Idaho State, or UMass, any one of those, after losing to Boise and Utah State, I think it's game over. I think Tom Holmo would have to make a statement at that point.
So any of those three much lesser opponents?
Yes. Okay. Definitely. So if you lose to Liberty, UMass, or Idaho State somehow, I think it's game over.
Yeah, I'll agree with that.
So I think even if you, I don't know, if you beat Boise State and beat Utah State and then you lose to one of those three, there'd still be some pretty upset people, I believe.
Yeah, I think you buy yourself a little more leash if you pull off one or both of Utah State and Boise State. But if you fall to 2-6, especially if you lose to both of them, and then if the losing streak turns into 6 or 7, he's got to be done.
Yeah, unfortunate to say. I like him. He's a good guy. I think he's he's good for BYU, but at that point, it's hard to say that he's good at the head coaching position.
Hard to argue that for sure.
Yeah, and it's not just looking at one season. You're looking at, you know, three seasons, and I don't think he necessarily was put in a stellar situation, but that's what you're asked to do at BYU.
That is true. Okay. Thanks for answering thanks for answering those hard hitting coach firing questions. Those are never fun ones, but I guess that's where we're at. But we'll see how it goes next couple weeks.
Yeah, no, and I understand why you ask him, but it's also right up there with religion and politics. It's one of those things that's hard to talk about without pissing someone off.
Hey, if you're at BYU, you're talking about all three, right?
All at the same time. Yep. All right, well, let's take some heat off that seat for a second. Let's move on to games around the nation.
Okay, I'm in.
Segment three, games around the nation. Andrew, let's start off down in the dirty, dirty South.
LSU, Florida. I feel like there's not anywhere else you need to start as far as what we're talking, you know, games around the nation. Did you get a chance to watch?
Let's see. I just did the highlights on that particular one.
Yeah, I watched some, not all. But, man, LSU might be really good. I'm excited for LSU Bama down the road here.
What was the final score on that one?
42-28. Florida hung around for most of the game into the third quarter, fourth quarter, but that LSU quarterback and offense just didn't let up.
Yeah, it looked like it was really tight until the third quarter. LSU went up one on them and then never let up.
Yeah, the thing I take away from Florida is the more I watch them play, the more I wonder how that backup QB wasn't starting for him all along. He seems like the real deal.
Right. That's kind of what I was thinking after watching some of these highlights and looking at the stats. He looks pretty legit. If they have a quarterback duel at the end of the season, maybe we could talk about getting him over to Utah. Porter transfer U is real. Awesome. Awesome. You know, another one that was pretty cool, always awesome to watch the rivalry, USC versus Notre Dame. What do you think of that one?
Man, I just, USC is an enigma to me. I'm not sure what to make of them. They show flashes with all their five-star talents, shows that they might be pretty good, and then they have other moments where you're looking at them playing, you're thinking, what in the world are they doing? But they hung around and played a top-10 Notre Dame team pretty close, so overall, it was a fun game.
So moving on, Oklahoma versus Texas. That is one that I actually got to watch until I saw the Georgia score and I switched over and finished that game. But let's stick with Oklahoma and Texas for a sec.
Yeah, fun game. I think Jalen Hurts shows why he's a Heisman front runner against one of the better teams he's played all year. Oklahoma's legit, man. I'm not sure. Maybe they lose one down the road, but they look like they might be a lock for the playoff here unless they hiccup somewhere.
Yeah, it's kind of like we talked about last week. They are a fun offense. Like, I think they're going to get some of these recruits from across the nation watching that and saying, I want to play there.
Yeah, who doesn't want to play for that offense at this point? Yeah, that's why they get all these five-star receivers and transfer portal quarterbacks. And who doesn't want to play there? Hard to argue with that.
Yep, definitely. And, as you know, I'm not a huge fan of teams that have been top tier for a long, long, long time. But I do have to say it's kind of nice to see Texas doing well again.
Man, they're fine. They have two losses now, and they'll still be in the top 25. They live a little bit off that name, and I think they're a pretty good football team. But I'm not sure how many two-loss teams are in the top 25 right now. So, I don't know. We'll see.
Right. I just mean more like it's nice to see them not playing like they did when Strong was there.
Yeah, so they're not at the bottom of the barrel. They're coming back. Yeah. Hopefully.
Yep. I think if they could stay you know, around 25 or so, I'd be happy with that, because seeing the same teams in the top 10 all the time gets old.
Yeah, it's true. But so, let's go over to the Georgia-South Carolina game. You watched the end of that
one? Oh, baby. Yeah, I had to switch over when I saw the score. I couldn't believe it. It was awesome.
So, but all you're going to hear is, man, the SEC is so good. Those bottom teams make those top teams work. But everybody knows South Carolina is not any good.
No, they've been mid-tier for a long time.
I just wish the SEC got the same treatment other conferences got. Like if Ohio State goes and loses to Nebraska or something like that, they're gonna get dinged real hard because they lost to a bad football team. But in the SEC, it's just it's so tough. You know, those big guys can't get through there undefeated.
Yeah. And where did they jump to, or drop to, I should say?
Let's look.
Clear to 10. So they went from number 2 to 10. Or 3. They went from 3 to 10.
Yeah, so you got to think that all but disqualifies them from the playoff, unless I guess they went out, beat Alabama, beat Florida, beat Clemson here at the end. They'd have to win out, right? Georgia's probably out after that.
Yes, definitely. Unless the stars align, Georgia's looking at a January 6th bowl game.
Yeah.
So, who knows? Maybe they'll get to play a Pac-12 team and they get another shot there.
Yeah, we'll see. I want them to be held the same way everybody else is. That's the last time I'll say it. We can move on.
So, here's one for you on that Georgia game. Goes back to the Clemson versus North Carolina game, going for 2 versus taking it into overtime. This time they took it into overtime and it paid off for them. Is it kind of the strategy I had mentioned, or just dumb luck?
Yeah, I'm buying into your suggestion a little more, that get it to overtime. Overtime might all but be a coin flip. You know, I'm buying that.
Yeah, I just keep thinking like, okay, every single defensive line in front of me has 50 pounds on me, and they know I'm going to run it. My odds of getting in the end zone, even though it's 2 yards, is like 10%, right? Maybe 20. You take it into overtime, you're just kind of rolling the dice, and it's like, okay, I got a 50-50 shot now. So, I don't know. There's so many different ways you can cook it.
That's true.
What's another game you liked?
Wisconsin continues to look pretty legit. They just demolished Michigan State 38-0. I'm excited for the Wisconsin-Ohio State matchup coming up here in the next little bit. Those two look like the best two teams in the Big Ten, so that one looks fun.
And another one that was interesting was the Arizona State-Washington State. I was kind of curious to see if Washington State would bounce back a little. Didn't look like it.
I don't know. It depends on how good we think Arizona State is. Washington State was there till the very end, 38-34. Jaden Daniels, Arizona State's freshman quarterbacks, ran one in with under 2 minutes to go to take the lead. I think Washington State righted the ship a little bit. I feel like, you know, it could still get away from them here, but if Arizona State's any good like we think they are, that's not a bad loss.
Right. It'll be interesting. Are you going to go to the game this weekend?
I wish. It's in Salt Lake. Too much gas money / ticket money to get up there, but I'll be watching for sure.
There you go. See, being so close to Arizona State, you feeling that Arizona pride swell within you?
No.
Do you feel like
I've worn my Utah shirt all over town this week, just, you know, prepare myself.
Anybody say anything?
My son went to basketball practice this week wearing his Utah shirt. He got a little flack from his head coach, so that made me laugh a little bit.
Ouch. How old is he?
5.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's fine.
That's funny. Coaches these days.
Seriously.
Oh, that's funny. All right. Well, you got to admit, you're probably baiting a little bit.
Oh, for sure. I didn't even take him to practice. I didn't even know he had it on. My wife had to tell me about it later. But you're asking for it. You wear that shirt in the city where you're playing that team this week. I can take it for sure.
Proud dad moment.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's go into Utah and BYU a little bit more in segment four, keys to this week's game. Segment four, keys to this week's game. You know, on the BYU side of the ball, I think there's a couple things that are just real simple that they could focus on. One is protect the young quarterback, whether it's Jaron or Romney. They just need to protect him. You know, six sacks last week against USF is unacceptable. I don't care how deep you are into the offensive line pool. You cannot allow a young quarterback to get sacked six times, which means he was probably hurried just as many. And luckily, Jaron didn't seem like he heard any footsteps or nothing, but any lesser quarterback would be starting to hear footsteps and get some happy feet. So you got to protect that quarterback, keep him feeling strong, and just let him focus on throwing and not what's going on around him. And obviously, the Achilles heel at the moment on the defensive side of the ball is just stop that run. I think it starts with the coaches. Get them in position. Load the box when you need to. Get creative. Do some stunts. And let's stop that run, not just the first half, but make some adjustments on the fly and stop him in the second half as well. Then after that, man, just play with some pride. Have some fun. Fly around. Play angry. You know, I feel like maybe there's a little bit of that was missing at the end of the game. I don't know if they just ran out of juice or what, but they just need to play with some pride and play angry, and at least they could win or lose, walk away proud of how they played.
Yeah, I think I agree with all those. I think, like you said, it's got to start with the coaching this week. Something has to change in the game plan to try to slow down the run. So I agree with all those points. As far as Utah goes, the number one thing that concerns me this week is the mobility of Jaden Daniels. I watched quite a few Arizona State games. Like you said, I'm down in this area. He's a kid Utah recruited, so I've watched him for a while. But the kid has some escapability in the pocket. Utah's done a great job getting pressure on the quarterback with four down linemen. But they have had some issues with finishing those kind of plays, keeping a guy in the pocket, not letting him escape and finishing the sack. So the thing that concerns me the most is his ability to get out and make big plays with his legs or scramble and find a receiver deep. I think obviously one of the cliches, limit big plays. But if Utah does that, I feel like you make Arizona State's offense go 8 to 10 plays, they're going to make a mistake. Freshman quarterback, an offensive line that, you know, has some leaky holes in it. Utah should be able to make a turnover there. As far as the offense goes, I think it's essential for them to be able to stay balanced. Arizona State's defense has shown that they are a pretty good defense. But from what I've seen, their D-line isn't anything special. Have to be able to run the football, keep them honest, and then take advantage of the play action that we've been doing all year long. Just got to be able to stay balanced. If we can't run the football on them early, then it doesn't set up for play action later and we become one-dimensional. So those are my two big things.
Yeah, no, it sounds good to me. It seems like, you know, this might be a little better team than your Oregon States, right? But, you know, don't stop doing what's working. You know, if it's not broke, don't fix it.
Exactly. I think Utah is who they are and they want to play their football game. And I think if they are who we think they are, they come out and get a win this week. But I think there are, like I said, a couple of things they need to focus on. These are two fan bases that I don't think like each other very much. There's recruits between the two teams, between quarterbacks and running backs, and a couple running backs that have gone to ASU and a couple running backs that have gone to Utah that were down to the final two. So I think this one means a little more to each side. And like I said earlier, if you've heard any Utah players this week, they didn't like how last year's game went, and they're looking to make it right this year. So I'm excited to see how it goes.
So Utah consider this a rival game?
I don't know. Anybody in the Pac-12 South at this point kind of feels a little rivalry-ish. but I've seen quite a few, you know how Twitter is, but I've seen quite a few tweets this week about Arizona State being a lot of Utah fans' least favorite team in the Pac-12. So not a lot of love lost between the fan bases, that's for sure.
Oh, that's perfect. Well, we'll find out come Saturday night how this all plays out for both teams, and then we can talk about that next week. It should give us a lot of good content.
For sure.
All right. As always, let's move on to our final segment, the final rant. Segment 5, final rant. Andrew Brown, why don't you lead us off tonight?
Well, I'll keep mine short and sweet and to the point because I know you have a lot to say. But my rant is that I love the focus that I've seen out of both sides of the ball the last 2 weeks. And I think that it continues this week. I'm excited to see what a focused Utah team looks like against a good opponent. And I'm excited to see two top 20 teams in Salt Lake this weekend. I'm going to go out on a limb and give you a 38-21 Utah prediction, because I think they're ready to go, and I think they're a better football team.
Oh, sounds awesome. Sounds good to me. I personally would be really surprised if Utah lost this one.
They just got to take care of business, which has always been a Utah Achilles heel, but I think they've already had their hiccup for this year, and I think this team's too good to do another one. I won't replay that if something else happens this week, but I feel pretty confident.
Well, let's keep that business tie on. Oh, man. So my final rant, you know, people that know me really well that I'm close to know that I was a Bronco fan. Not crazy, but I was a Bronco fan. I liked his mentality and thought he took things, like you just said, kind of as a business aspect. When he was getting flack near the end of his tenure, even though he was still winning, you know, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 games a season consistently, I felt like something was wrong. Like, I don't think people realize what they just did issuing the get out of here card, right? And watching him pack up and all of his assistants leaving with him and not looking back. You could just feel something was wrong. Now, it's not to say that Kalani is bad or is the wrong answer or anything like that, but I think there was something fundamentally wrong that Bronco saw and knew that he couldn't change and left. And that's what I'm afraid of. So my final rant, my soapbox, is I'm afraid that these same leaders that took away sports from the Ricks program are the same people that are holding the purse strings right now for the BYU football program. And they are not okay at the end of the day putting money towards things that they would consider frivolous, like recruiting or updating facilities or just doing what you have to do in today's day and age to get top recruits so that we can go and take on these schedules that we keep putting together. So we're doing a great job putting these crazy awesome schedules together, but we're not backing up the administration at the mid-level and the coaching staff and the players by going out and recruiting, putting our money where our mouth is. It's just, it's crazy to me. I remember last year I took my boy. I had a chance to go into the locker room right before a football game. I was stoked. I was way excited. And I was excited for my boy to go and see this. We walk through the locker room where their practice facility is, and it's literally the exact same locker room that they walked me through when I was a sophomore in high school in 2003. Like, nothing had changed. It was actually the exact same shuffleboard that was sitting out in the middle of the locker room, and it's thrashed, and it has the old symbol from the Croton era. You know, that's like, what, two symbols ago, two logo changes ago. And it just blew my mind. You look around at some of these other facilities when they show them on ESPN, even their practice facility locker rooms, they've got everything super well lit. There's TVs everywhere. They've got Xboxes. They've got their logo or their uniforms set out on display on mannequins. And just everything's super awesome and top-notch. And when people show up, they get pictures and they get videos made of them. And they're, you know, swooed over and just everything like that. And we come to find out we only have two people that are full-time that are in charge of recruiting football? That's insane. Like, how are you supposed to compete when you're taking Mountain West style recruiting, like you're trying to recruit for Wyoming, but you're scheduling like you're USC? It's insane. Like, I don't know how we're going to be able to sustain independence this way long term. And it's super embarrassing for the coaching, for the coaches, for the players, for the fans to go and say, hey, we're going to be okay with losing 6 or 7 games a season on national television because we've got a contract with ESPN. I just don't, really sad, and I'm nervous long term, how we're going to be able to sustain this unless we can take some money that they're already making in this independence. You know, everybody keeps saying we're making tons more money by not joining a program or a Power Five. Okay, let's take that money and self-invest it back into the football program, what got this whole thing started. And, you know, use it for recruiting, facilities, coaching, make it so the coaches can just focus on coaching and not having to go out and do their own fundraisers. The other thing, I think I mentioned this to you, Andrew, is I think the honor code might change up. You know, you change that up a little bit. The idea would be do something like use BYU as a missionary tool instead of pumping through only, you know, 98-99% LDS people. Let's say, okay, we're going to do 90% LDS and then 10% non. And the idea is, okay, if you want to have that cheap $3K a semester BYU style tuition, you have to sign the honor code. But if you don't, that's fine. You can do what anybody else would do and go and drink and have sex or whatever you want to do. You can't do it on campus, but you're going to be paying an out-of-state style rate, $15K, $20K a semester, whatever it might be for a private school, right? But those guys, if they're willing to come in, pay the price financially, they still are sitting in Book of Mormon classes. They're still sitting in religion classes. They're still getting to know what the church is all about. And even if they don't become members, which is fine, at least they walk away saying, hey, at least I get it. I respect them. I understand them. Just like Darren Gray. I mean, he's a pastor now. He's never become LDS, but he always has this huge respect for him, and he loves having been at BYU. You get better athletes. They go through the program. They get to know the church better. It's a great missionary tool. Everybody wins. But at the end of the day, the football team is ran by people that really truly at the end of the day don't care about football. You know, you work your way up the chain. People at the top holding the purse strings are saying where that goes really doesn't care about football, which as a football fan, that's frustrating because that's what you're wanting to see be successful.
That is a rant right there. I got nothing to add.
Any of that make any sense at all?
All makes sense, and it all is legitimate. And it was great.
Man, I had that all written down, but I didn't even read it. I was just going. I just...
That's because that's not the first time you've thought any of those things, Chase. It's ingrained in there.
Yeah. And it's interesting how this has evolved over time, because I legitimately was worried when Bronco left. I don't think people realized what they were letting go. I really don't.
I think your point of him seeing the writing on the wall is spot on. I think in the end, he realized that he might have maxed out what you could do at BYU in their current state, and he's ready to move on.
Exactly. If something or someone was willing to change with the changes that they had made to independence and the huge shift that happened in the football world with the Power Fives, unless something like that was going to happen, I think he knew. I really do. And he's the kind of guy that just, like, he's willing to put on the back of his jerseys for the full season, but he didn't end up doing it, right? honor, tradition, all that stuff, he would have stayed there till the very end had there not been some scary writings on the wall.
For sure.
So I don't think that, I don't think it's game over. We all just say, well, it sucks, we're just going to be okay with being 6-6 is a great year for BYU. I don't think it's to that point yet, but I do think that if Riker, my son, who's 8 years old, wants to be rooting for BYU and watching a winning tradition in 10, 15, 20 years from now, something's got to give.
I agree with you. Couldn't agree more. So,
well, that's my soapbox. Oh, shoot. Well, that was fun. That was good to get off my chest, but hopefully we didn't scare away anybody.
No, hopefully we can come back with good vibes from both teams this next week.